I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, September 27th, 2020, and this is episode 87 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing is inspiration, the muse, whatever you want to call it. I have been feeling really inspired this week, and I'm really grateful because it's right on time. As I was working through my writing sessions this week, one day a quote came to me and I was able to find it. It's from Paulo Coelho from The Alchemist, and it says, "And when you want something, all the universe conspires in helping you to achieve it." And that is really how I felt this week. So I'm working on a brand new idea for a story. Now that I have finished the Earthsinger Chronicles and just about turned everything in. Everything is either with the editor or with the proofreader and ready to go. So I focused completely on new projects, new ideas. And right now I am focused wholeheartedly on the heist story. So if you have been listening for a while, you will know that I have this seed of an idea, just this tiny thing, which is my next novel would be a heist novel. I've never written one before. I'm fascinated by heist stories. I think a lot of people like them. They can be a lot of fun, and I wanted to try my hand at it. I did not know anything else about it. I decided at some point it was going to be a 1920s fantasy heist, and that is all I knew for a long time. And I really didn't have the time to focus while I was finishing other things. But now is the time. So I have been doing research and making notes and having ideas and brainstorming and thinking about things and just sort of letting things flow, because the way that my creative process seems to work is it does require time. Like I'll spend a couple of hours thinking and brainstorming, and then I'll have to take the rest of the day off and let my brain work. So that's kind of what I've been doing. Now I'm sitting down and really focusing on it, and I want the ideas to come, and they have been. And so what that quote means to me is sort of, and what is actually manifesting is, like, as I focus on it, as I sit down and do the work, whether it's research or brainstorming or talking it out with someone else, things come to me. So, and it's almost, I mean, it's very random. Like I heard someone talking about a new podcast and I was like, oh, that sounds like something I really want to listen to. I started listening to that podcast in that first episode. I had an idea. It led me down a trail of research, which just sparked more ideas and then led to other research. Then I would write things down and talk to people, and it's just the ball started rolling, and everywhere I looked, something was giving me an idea. And I think it's that universe conspiring to help me achieve this goal of figuring out what the story is. You know, the story is developed very differently from a lot of my other stories in terms of, usually I will get a character and a character in a situation, and that will be the beginning, and I'll know something about that character and that situation, and everything else will come out of that. This idea didn't start with a character. It started with just an idea, a basic genre of story. And then slowly, as I started researching the time period, I found the characters, or the main character, and also other side characters. As I would do research, I'd be like, well, what if one of them was like this? Or what if one of them was like this? And so I kind of created archetypes of different people and narrowed those down. And so now I'm at the point where I finally figured out what they're stealing in this heist, and I'm working on the magic system and the different fantasy aspects of it and how those come into play. And, you know, just I look at something, I read an article, I watch a video on YouTube, and I'm just gathering information, and it's coming into my brain, and then little sparks of inspiration will be firing, and I'll be like, oh, what if this happens? That's a good idea. And it just leads to other sparks of inspiration. And it, like, literally, like, everything I look at, everything I consume, it's giving me ideas, and I'm slowly starting to whittle and narrow this down. It's kind of like the marble thing, where, like, the story is inside the marble, and I'm chipping away all the stuff that's not the story. And I don't think that that is ever how I've done this before. And so this whole process is a challenge for me. There's a number of challenges. A new type of story, a heist story that is also still a romance. There's going to be a romantic storyline in there somewhere, because I'm me and that's what I need. But yeah, it's something that is a little intimidating to me. I've never done that before. Setting it in our world, in the real history, is something different for me. So that's another layer of challenges. But it's invigorating and it's exciting. And I think that we should always be challenging ourselves and trying to grow as artists. Otherwise, I know I would get bored, you know, if I was just writing the same kind of story over and over again. I knew that I couldn't take on another epic fantasy immediately after finishing the Arsinger Chronicles. I hope to do another one in the future, but right now, I needed to pivot a little bit and to try to push myself into something different, which is what I'm doing. Another quote that I saw was from Austin Kleon, and he goes, "I never feel like I have a book in me. I always feel like there's a book around me. It's like I'm a planet, and there's all this space junk orbiting me, and all the junk starts smashing together and forming book chapters. My job is to grab that stuff around me and shape it into something." So I think it's a little, for me, it's not quite that space junk idea, but like in miniature, like, yeah, there's stuff around me and I think it's hitting me. And it's not like it's automatically just forming chapters of books, but it's forming like the seed that will plant and become a chapter of a book. There was another quote that I saw on Austin Kleon's site from David Lynch. And he said, "Ideas are so beautiful and they're so abstract and they do exist someplace. I don't know if there's a name for it. And I think they exist like fish. And I believe that if you sit quietly, like you're fishing, you will catch ideas." And that really resonated with me. Because part of the work of writing is sitting in the chair and being receptive to ideas. And not just sitting passively in the chair, but by that I mean, I still show up every morning at my appointed time when I'm co-writing with my friend online. And even though I'm not writing words right now, and I'm not even really plotting, like if someone asks me what I'm doing, I'm plotting, but I haven't even gotten to the plot yet. I'm just trying to figure out the story and then the plotting will come. And because a heist story had necessarily sort of a complicated plot, at least the how they plan it, how it's executed, that's part of the fun of it. It's like, how do they do that? And how do you relay that information to the reader in book form? Like movies are different. I've been watching a lot of movies as inspiration, but in book form, there's so much more detail needed and how you get that information across to the audience is going to have to be different. So I'm not even there yet. I'm just at the basics. Who are these people? What do they want? Why do they want it? And what will happen if they don't get it? And it's taking a long time to figure those things out. Like I'm getting closer and closer and I'm shaving off marble, back to my other analogy, off of this block and finding that statue inside, which is the story. It's just taking longer and it's just been very different. But I'm glad. Like I don't want everything to always be the same. I mean, it would be easier if the process was the same for every book. I'm sure for some people it is, but it just doesn't work that way for me. But I'm completely and totally enjoying how it is working. And I love how it's, I love seeing the connections as they form and trying to document them so that at the end of this, I can be like, well, it all started way back here. And then through this course of random events, I got this story that I'm giving to you now. I did watch The Thomas Crown Affair, the remake, the Pierce Brosnan version. I haven't checked out the original yet, but that is an interesting movie because the heist actually happens at the very beginning. It's a long opening sequence. And then the rest of the movie is mostly like this cat and mouse game between Rene Russo and Pierce Brosnan. And as she's trying to catch him. And so, but it also is a love story. The love story doesn't quite work for me in that movie. Like, I get it, but I needed like another scene or two or something to really connect those dots. But aside from that, I really enjoyed that. And it's interesting, the different kinds of characters, because I did rewatch the opening of Ocean's 11. I'll probably watch it again at some point. I mean, I've seen that movie so many times that I didn't feel like I needed to watch it again, but I probably actually do. And just looking at, you know, how other films approach it and motivation and things like that as I'm thinking about my own character, who's going to be very different than these movies I'm watching. But it's also, you know, it's good. to see what's out there and see how people approach it and what, you know, how they're generating emotions in the audience. Something I heard somewhere, I don't know where it was, someone said that heist movies are plot first, plot driven, and so they're not really character movies. And I mean, I can say that, like, take Ocean's 11. I was talking about this with my husband, and he was like, you don't really know anything about Danny Ocean, which is true. You never find out anything about him. You get the basics, like, he's basically a good-hearted dude. He's well-respected by his colleagues. He's very smart and charming and charismatic and all of that, but he loves his wife, his ex-wife, and he's willing to go through extreme means to get her back, aka get back at the person who took her from him. But yeah, is that character development? I mean, it's enough that you have some feeling about him, but you don't know anything about him. I got a question in one of the Pitch Wars video Q&A sessions that I did last week about plot-driven versus character-driven stories, and like, which one do you like better or something like that. And what I said was, it was a false dichotomy. Like, I think that the best books, the best stories, whatever medium, require an integration of plot and character to be completely intertwined so that you're getting both, because the best stories have both. And even though we don't know anything about Danny Ocean, you kind of know things about him, like the things I just said. And they hint at a backstory that's never really revealed. Interesting with Ocean's 12, when you get into Rusty's backstory, the Brad Pitt character. Like, I like Ocean's 12, but I almost wonder if we needed... Like, sometimes knowing the backstory is less helpful than seeing the effects of the backstory through a person's actions in the present, right? As entertaining as Ocean's 12 is, learning more about Brad Pitt's character didn't do a lot for me, I think. I was listening to a podcast about the movie Solo, the Han Solo movie. Kind of at the end, everyone was like, did we need this movie? No, we absolutely didn't. Like, did you need to know Han Solo's backstory? It's kind of a similar thing where in the original trilogy, you see who he is, you see his character arc, his motivations and the evidence of this past that he's had. And it's kind of enough. Showing us how he got his name and why he dresses the way he does and all of these things that the Han Solo movie did that nobody really asked for. Nobody really wanted all of those things. Did they help? I don't know. Anyway, I was talking about characters versus plot and intertwining them so that you understand who they are by virtue of the things that they do. And whatever backstory you get, you have to really carefully decide what to show on the page and what to make verbal, and make sure that it's absolutely necessary and that it's not something that you could have better shown by their actions. And so that's kind of churning in the brain also. Oh, also, there was a big spike in downloads on a specific episode. So if anyone out there knows why, please contact me and let me know, because I've been trying to figure it out and I have no idea. The episode that had the spike on Monday the 21st was episode 78. It's called Stickies, Notebooks, Folders, and Digital Organization. So if you are listening to this one and you heard about that episode somewhere and was referred to it or something, just let me know. I'm just curious. And I would like to thank whoever shared that episode, because a lot of people listened to it, like a lot. So just wondering to assuage my own curiosity. This week's featured podcast is First Cup of Coffee with Jeffy Kennedy.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffy Kennedy, and I'm here with my first cup of coffee every morning on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. I'm an award-winning author of fantasy and romantic fantasy, and I chat with you over my first cup of coffee of the day, discussing what it's like to be a career author. I honestly share the ups and downs of this business, including my daily challenges and triumphs in getting my novels written. I give insights into the business side of being a writer, including agents, publishing, both traditional and self-publishing paths, and how much money I really make. I also give writing advice and reflect on leading a fulfilling and creative life. It's low-key, conversational. The cats sometimes put in appearances. I hope you all will join me there. Sit down and have a cup of coffee with me.
And I think that if you've been listening long enough, you know that I listen to this podcast every day that it comes out, like every episode. So I really enjoy it, and check it out. So in sad news, we did lose our dog Sable this past week. She was about 14 or 15. We had adopted her when we lived in Norfolk, Virginia. We had been married for about a year. And so what happened was, I promised to tell the story of how we adopted her. I'm not sure if it's a good story, but I am not a dog person. To this day, I don't consider myself a dog person, even though I've lived for the past few years with two large dogs. My husband is a dog person. And so we had been married for a year, and he was in his residency, and he started volunteering at the Humane Society because he is a dog person. And even before we got married, when we were dating, he would literally take me to the puppy store on our dates and like play with puppies because he loves animals. I mean, my husband is basically a ball of goo in the shape of a man. So he was volunteering, and if you've ever been to a animal shelter, at least the ones on the East Coast seem to be full of pit bulls. And my husband is also kind of a dog whisperer. Like, to this day, he'll get calls from friends, friends of friends, people's cousins, ex-boyfriends, who have a dog that has a problem, and he will go and fix them. He fixed my brother's dog, my brother's dog, who has passed away since then, and his cat. So Steve, the dog, Keith is the cat. They did not get along in this townhouse. And we were out in LA, and Jared did something and fixed them. And for the rest of Steve's life, he got along with Keith. So this is a thing that happens. And so when he was volunteering with the Humane Society, he was working with dogs and training them and getting them adopted. And he wanted a dog. I was not super in favor of that. So his strategy was to bring home dogs from the shelter, and nominally it was to socialize them, to get them socialized, used to a house so he could observe them and see how they acted in a house, and then be able to speak about them intelligently and get them adopted. And this actually worked. He got tons of dogs adopted. Like, he was just a machine. They would go to these adoption events, and he is the gift. So he was inuring me and getting me used to dogs at the same time. So we would have like mini fosters, like a day or over the weekend, the dog would stay with us, and then he would go and find some parents for it. And then there was Sable, and she had been in the shelter for a while. She's a black pit bull, and black dogs, especially in shelters, get killed more frequently. They get adopted less. And so he saw parallels with this black pit bull and with the plight of black men in America. And Sable was also extremely sweet. And so at some point he knew that he wanted to adopt her, and it was just a matter of getting me on board. And so, it took me to the shelter, and I saw her, and I mean, I'm not heartless. I can't walk into puppy jail and see all of these puppies behind bars and not want to adopt one, even if I don't actually like dogs that much. We had fostered another smaller dog, a real foster, for a couple of weeks, and she was crazy, and that did not help his cause at all, because she ripped up the PlayStation controller, she chewed up a bunch of CDs, and we did find her a home that was not ours. But Sable was very sweet, and just to make a long story shorter, I did end up really liking her. She was very needy. She was a lap dog. She was a 75-pound lap dog, as many pit bulls are. And she was just incredibly sweet. She became a therapy dog. She passed the Canine Good Citizen test on her first try without any training, which is just a test that dogs go through to see if they can. It's kind of the first step towards becoming a therapy dog. But he would take her to nursing homes and hospitals and as a therapy dog, doing her therapy work and helping people and just being her outgoing, friendly self. So yeah, Sable was definitely a blessing in our lives, and we had her for 11 years. And making that decision that she was suffering and it was time for her to go was probably one of the hardest things I've done as an adult person. Incredibly, incredibly difficult. And, you know, I know a lot of people out there have gone through this also and know how difficult it is. And saying goodbye to a pet that, you know, a family member that you've lived with for over a decade was very, very difficult. You know, we have, our pets are our family. We do not have children. And so, yeah, our pets are our family. And saying goodbye to a family member is never easy. But I'm really grateful that we gave her 11 extra years that she would not have had, because in all likelihood, she was slated for being put to sleep at the shelter. So I feel good about that. I feel good about just having her in our lives and the other lives that she was able to touch. All of our family, all of the people who she did therapy dog work with. So thank you for indulging me for talking about my dog, Sable, who I miss very much. And it was a decision that we had to make. And she is not suffering anymore. So as not to end on a sad note, I will share something that has helped us this week, brighten our spirits a little bit. We binge-watched The Great American Barbecue Showdown on Netflix. Now, I know that sounds a little strange, but it actually is kind of a heartwarming show. It's a barbecue competition show, but everyone is so nice to each other. It's not one of those competition shows where they're like, I didn't come here to make friends. You know, it's one of those where if someone's having a problem, even though they're competing against each other, they're like, oh, you need help? Let me help you. And it's like exactly what we need right now. I was reading an article about the casting and the producers of the show, and they did that on purpose. They were purposefully very concerned about the tone of the show and having it be friendly. And they went through like 1,200 applicants to get to the 8 contestants on the show. And it really is nice. It's sweet. They're cooking weird food sometimes. They have, you know, the reality TV show ups and downs, personalities. But it was so refreshing that even when it got to the end, everyone was hugging each other. Everyone was crying when someone else was going home. I mean, it is, and besides, it was just very entertaining. So it was a comfort watch. It brought some joy to our household. And I recommend The Great American Barbecue Showdown. So that is it for me for this week. I hope that you have a wonderful week and that you are staying safe and wearing your masks and planning to vote and all of that good stuff. I am on a news fast. I think that news fast will last forever, potentially. Like, there's a podcast that I listened to for news, and I haven't listened in like 2 weeks, because if something big happens, I'm sure I'll find out some way, but I can't right now. So enjoy your week, do things that make you happy, and I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.